UWA-517, do you want to report a UFO?
Negative. We don't want to report.
Ares 31, do you wish to report a UFO? Over.
Negative. We won't report one of those either.
Ares 31, do you wish to file a report of any kind? Over.
I wouldn't know what kind of report to file, sir.
Ares 31, me neither.
Number 71, Papa Golf, go ahead.
And was there anybody above us that passed us like 30 seconds ago?
Number 71, Papa Golf, negative.
Okay. Stop this. It's a UFO.
Yeah. Hey, it's Murray 1095. Yeah, something just passed over. Don't know what it was, but it's at least 2,000-3,000 feet above us. Yeah, it passed right over the top of us.
911.
You guys busy? Did we just call about the UFOs we saw?
Mm-hmm.
They're out there, taking airplanes.
And a dispatch. Bob, I swear to God, 4 calls in on an unidentified object over Liberty.
4 calls.
4 calls on an unidentified flying object.
All right, take a look. All right, we'll check it out.
Welcome to UFO Chronicles, a place where people share their experiences of the strange and unexplained. If you've had an encounter and would like to be on the show, you can email me at ufochronicles@gmail.com.
Hello everyone and welcome to the show, wherever in the world you are listening from. I hope you're all well and good. I'm Nick Hunter and this is the UFO Chronicles podcast. Starting us off today is David, coming to us from Texas in the US, sharing his UFO encounter. Then we'll be staying in the US and speaking to Michael in Oregon about the objects he witnessed that were moving, multiplying, and dividing in unexplainable ways and speeds. David up next. If you enjoy listening to the podcast and would like to help support my work, there is a couple of ways to do this. Either you can join Patreon and become a patron of the show for as little as $5 a month, or you can donate via PayPal. And if you like, you can set up monthly reoccurring payments. All links to support the podcast are below in the show notes and on the website. Any help is extremely appreciated, and it helps the show to continue running. Now, on with the show. Hello, David. Welcome to the podcast.
Thank you.
Thank you for joining us today, and you're calling from the state of Texas.
That's right. I'm in the suburbs of Dallas-Fort Worth.
That's great. Okay. Now, David, you had a UFO sighting that occurred in 2021. Would you like to start at the beginning, please, David?
Yeah, thank you. So it was in October 2021. It was about 6:12 in the morning. I had just gotten up to start my morning walk. It was a very, very clear morning. And about 20 seconds after I start heading down the sidewalk, I noticed something sort of blinking in my periphery. Imagine like a twinkling star. And so I look up at it and it takes my eyes maybe a second to focus on what I'm looking at, because I'm expecting it to move, but in fact, it is hovering. Because I'm thinking it might be like a plane. And so my eyes are sort of waiting to see if it moves, and it doesn't move, it's just hovering. And then I realize that it's not like a star or a planet. It's not a plane. It is, if you can imagine, a red sphere with a green sphere inside of it. Sort of like a Pokeball, where the inner sphere is like a glowing green color. And around this green light, it's not really a sphere. It's just, to me, it's just appearing as like a bright light. And it's kind of too bright to look at directly. If you can imagine sort of looking at like a Christmas tree light bulb, you wouldn't want to look directly at it. But it's this green bright light is creating a red orb around it. And the orb is getting, well, the light's getting bright, the green light is getting brighter. And as it's getting brighter, the red orb is growing inside. Initially, I thought I might be looking at a meteor exploding. I take a lot of walks because I have a desk job. So I try to compensate by going outside and walking a lot. And I've seen like a meteor explode in the sky and create sort of a red burst around it. And when it does, the red burst just keeps expanding forever until it dissipates. And little flecks of the meteor shoot off and create little glows, sort of like a when a firework explodes. So I'm thinking that might be what I'm looking at with like a green star directly behind it. I have to tell you, it's really weird to see something you've never seen before. Because your brain has, you know, by the time you're an adult, your brain's seen everything it's going to see. But when you've seen something, or when you see something you've never seen before, it's really a weird phenomenon, because your brain's like trying to figure out what it's looking at. So anyway, the orb does not keep dissipating and burst into flint. And in fact, the orb has sort of something going on inside of it. What I would describe now as plasma. Basically, the green light was so bright and hot that it was creating atmospheric plasma around it. And the reddish orb was not entirely red. It was actually like sort of an orange or red, but it was sort of changing colors on the inside. And what I understand now from having researched this is that basically orange would be like the lowest temperature that it would burn at, or maybe red would be the lowest temperature it would burn at. But basically that's the color that, like the wavelength of the light when it's at a certain temperature. And so basically because the temperature was varied, it wasn't a uniform color. That's my understanding now. But to me, it just looked like the orb had like a fire going on inside. Not totally like fire, but sort of had like electrical flame looking thing. Like I said, I've never seen anything like this in the sky before. It was really quite a sight to behold. And the orb does not keep growing. In fact, starts to shrink. And so I sort of dispensed with is this a meteor thing? The other thing is that if it were a meteor and it were stationary, that would indicate it was traveling like directly at, which seemed improbable. So if I had a little longer to look at it, now bear in mind this whole encounter lasts like somewhere between 5 and 10 seconds, but I look up at it, I see this thing, the red orb is growing, it starts shrinking as like the object inside of it gets a little bit cooler. And then the red orb sort of goes away. And I don't remember if it went from like 30% to zero immediately, like a light bulb gets switched it off, or if it just went really, really quickly away. But I think what that was that the object fell below a certain necessary temperature to generate plasma, because you have to have a really hot object in the sky to make plasma. So I think it basically got below that temperature and then the plasma stuck. And then the object sort of stayed in that location for maybe half a second. So first of all, at that point, I'm thinking, is this an object in the sky shining very brightly and hovering? And then as I'm thinking that, the orb goes away, stays there for like a half second, and then it zips over to the side of my field of vision. Maybe you're holding out your hand, maybe move your hand over 2 inches, 3 inches in the air. And it went so quickly that I did not see a light trail. But I got the perception that it moved. And it moved totally horizontally. It didn't go up or down any altitude when it did that. When I looked at it, it was maybe 45 degrees to my left initially. And then when I looked up at it, it's maybe 30 to 40 degrees off the horizon. So it zips over in the sky so fast I can't even really see it move. And then I look at it over there in that new location, and before I'm able to like start making out its form, it zips away into space. Now, to me, it looked like it blinked out of existence. If you can imagine the light going out on a cathode ray TV or cathode tube TV, where it sort of like disappears into itself, and it did so like an accelerating rate. From my perspective, it looked like it shot away from me, like something that had been pulled back on a slingshot and then released, and it went like that into space. But it could have been sort of something that just got that like sucked inside of itself. I guess it could have been going into like another dimension and sort of like going, but it looked to me like it went back into space and it disappeared, you know, beyond like the vanishing distance, I'd say in like a 20th of a second or maybe less. And I know that amount of time because, you know, when you're little, you play that game on your stopwatch to see how quickly you can get the stopwatch to start and stop. And, you know, 20th of a second would be 0.05. And that's about as, you know, as fast as you could possibly start and stop a time watch or start and stop a stopwatch would be about how quickly it is just into space. So I'm, you know, dumbfounded by what I've just seen. And I keep staring at the sky. After about a couple minutes, I realize I need to keep going on my walk because I have a brief to write that day. And I send a text message to a friend at 6:20 saying, I just saw a UFO. And that's when I realized, oh, I need to start writing some of this stuff down. So I took some contemporaneous notes. When I did that, I sort of charted out where I was versus how far I'd walked, or where my house was to where how far I'd walked, how long that took to pin down the time, started writing down some details. But yeah, I've been interested in this topic my whole life, never seen anything interesting in the sky. This was a short sighting, but to me it was, you know, really pretty it was clear, you know, because I could very clearly see that there was something going on inside of the orb around it that was unlike anything that I've seen. I didn't do much about it for a little while. I sort of put down the UFO topic for a while in my mind. I lost interest in it after law school. I took a class called National Security Law, where I learned that the National Security Act, which created the NSA, CIA, Air Force, Joint Chiefs of Staff, National Security Council, I believe the National Reconnaissance Office, but I'm not positive on that one. That stuff, all that legislation happened and got passed in the weeks after Roswell. And so I thought, oh, okay, it was sort of a propaganda to get the legislation through. And then people just forgot about it because it wasn't real. And once I realized that, you know, it could be a government tool, a political tool, I stopped being interested in it. And the other thing I realized psychologically about the phenomenon is that, you know, I don't really care if aliens exist. I just want to know. And if the answer is that we're all alone, well, then there you don't get an answer because you always keep searching. But if there is something there and then you know, then you know and the quest is over. So once I realized that about this phenomenon, I realized, okay, this is really being driven by a desire for people to have an answer. And that was enough for me to put it down. But then I had this encounter, which I was very busy that day. I wasn't looking to have a UFO sighting, but it was pretty definitive. I've researched every possible explanation. I reported to MUFON. They couldn't explain it. I have searched FAA records. I submitted a FOIA request. Haven't found any information about it. So, you know, I don't know what to do with this information now, but, you know, I know it's not scientific evidence, but it's evidence to me. And so, you know, I'm the finder of fact for my life. And so, I don't know. I feel pretty committed to this topic now. And so I know a lot of people are feeling discouraged about the UFO disclosure process, but from my perspective, I'm getting back on the wagon or on the horse. So I'm going to be writing my senators.
That's great, David. If you look at it from the point of view of it being a meteorite, say, 5 to 10 seconds for a meteor viewing is very long. You know, usually when you see a meteorite and it's entering the atmosphere, it's so quick. You know, by the time you realize what's just happened, it's already over.
Yeah. Well, funny you mentioned that. I witnessed the Texas fireball in July of 2022. If you Google Texas fireball July, you'll see it. I happened to be on a walk facing exactly that direction when it happened. I knew it seemed so implausible that I'd see something else cool in the sky. So I took a picture a picture of what I saw. I sent it to my wife exactly at that time so I could record, because, you know, I'm an attorney, so I'm concerned about facts, things like that. Yeah, I estimated that to take 1.5 to 2 seconds. I don't remember if I wrote that down in the text, but that was how long it happened in my mind. I saw the whole thing because I was literally facing right that direction. I noticed when it started peeking out, it started glowing. That lasted like 7 to 9 seconds or something like that. But I way underestimated the amount of time it took. And, you know, that shot across the sky, because that's what a meteor does. This wasn't moving at all. You know, this was just something burning brightly and then fading a little and then shooting over and disappearing. But if it had moved, I would have, you know, my eyes would have started tracking it. I only saw it grow and shrink once, but I had the sensation that it was sort of pulsing. And that when I glanced at it, I was probably looking at it as it was shrinking again, but it took me a second to focus on it. And what I watched was it start pulsing again. But I can't be sure of that.
Even if it was a meteorite that was directly heading towards you, as you know, from your field of view, it wouldn't change trajectory. You know, it wouldn't move to the left. It would just continue on its journey and then eventually burn it out completely.
Yeah, exactly. And this thing didn't burn out. It moved a different direction. I mean, I don't know what else to say. I wouldn't waste my time if I did not think I saw an extraterrestrial vehicle in the sky or a replica of it. I initially had some denial over the idea that it was there already when I walked out of my door. I really wanted it to be something that started when I started noticing it in my periphery. Because if that happened, then it was just something that just happened while I was out there. But if it was already there when I left the house that day, then it would kind of seem like it decided to leave because it noticed me notice it. If that makes sense. And I couldn't conceive of how that'd be possible without there being sort of like some consciousness interplay. I'm really opposed to that whole idea. No offense to any of your listeners personally. I like the idea of the solitude of my own mind. That's the only thing that kept me, helped me sleep at night when I was a kid after watching Unsolved Mysteries, stories about alien abductions. It was the idea that I had some sort of privacy in my mind. I think it's possible these things have just the most amazing level of facial scanning and optical, you know, security detection, like beyond anything we could imagine. And so it gives us the perception that they're in our minds. But really, you know, they just saw me, saw it. And I just emerged from behind probably the trees from across the street and said, oh, I got to get out of here. So it stopped doing whatever it was doing. Sort of took like an evasive maneuver, or maybe it had to change directions to leave the atmosphere, and then it boogied on out. That's what it looks like happened. And for a while, I really wanted to deny that, but that's what I saw. And so I tried to come up with other explanations for why it might have, you know, just started to happen, 20 seconds into my walk, as opposed to seeing me and then leave. I'm not sure if that answers your question.
Absolutely. On the website, in the description of this episode, I will put David's drawing of the object he saw, as well as the MUFON report, which they classed it as unknown.
Yeah.
Prior to this experience, had you had any experiences before this?
The only other time that I thought I saw a UFO was when I was walking with a friend down the shore in Long Beach, California, and he pointed to something in the sky and said, hey, look, those helicopters are chasing a UFO. And sure enough, that's what it looked like. It looked like a bunch of helicopters were flying after a greenish orb. And so in that sense, yeah, I did at some point think I'd seen a UFO before that. But even in that moment, I noticed that the green orb that they were chasing in my friend's mind, that green orb was the same color as the taillights of the choppers that were chasing after it. My friend was a pilot, and I said, what color are the lights on helicopters? And he said, green and red. I said, oh, okay. I think what that was, a military helicopter had turned off all of its lights except for the green taillight, and it flew ahead of its squadron, and they flew by the coast to sort of mimic a UFO encounter, and they probably did it for laughs. And in fact, you know, that's Commander Fravor on his appearance on the Joe Rogan podcast talked about the fact that he had done that with his helicopter when he was flying around, that they would find ways to spoof UFO experiences. It was kind of shocking for the guy who's going on the Joe Rogan podcast to tell people that UFOs do exist. But anyway, so for, you know, a moment there, when my friend said he saw one, I kind of agreed with him that that's what it looked like. But, you know, I started debunking it within, you know, milliseconds of starting to look at this thing, because I perceived it, you know, quickly to be something of natural phenomenon.
Which is always a good idea. Yeah, the eyes can be deceiving sometimes.
Yeah, and when I had my encounter last year, that was one of the first things I thought about was, well, this is just a red, and these are just red and green lights. And so, and the friend I texted was the friend I saw that UFO with, or that who thought he saw a UFO. So, I mean, it was a notable experience, but I think it was an attempt to spoof. And, you know, I basically have two remaining explanations in my mind. One is some sort of electromagnetic phenomenon that I don't know of. And then the other is that somebody was trying to make it look like that's what happened in the sky. But the reason I don't think that's very plausible is, one, there's really not an audience at 6:12 in the morning in the sleepy suburbs of Dallas. I'd woken up earlier than usual that day. I usually get out around 6:30, and I'm usually one of the first people out. So if you're spoofing it, you know, who are you spoofing it for? If you wanted, you know, when I had that experience with my friend a decade earlier, that was on, you know, a Friday night on a busy coast town, you know, in California. So there was something, you're showing off for somebody, for a group. But, you know, I think it was like Tuesday or Wednesday morning, 6:00. I don't know why anybody would try to spoof something like that in the sky. I don't know who they'd be doing it for. And then the other thing is that I have a neighbor that's a pilot, and I was actually standing about in front of his house when I saw the thing. And I actually ran into him about half an hour before my interview with my MUFON field investigator. And I told him what I saw, and he said, well, I don't know, but I know that that area is not a military operating area. I said, oh, okay. So there's no military operating area in that direction. So, you know, it sort of rules out the idea of a military drone experiment, because I think that if they were doing something like that, they would do that in a military operating area.
Right, yeah. This particular sighting like this, I have had other guests report this. I think at least on two occasions, possibly three occasions actually, over the last few years.
Well, so I did some research on plasma balls, and there's actually a report from NARCAP called Aviation Safety in America, Spherical UFO. And it says, in some cases, the spherical UAP are described as light, while others, while other descriptions are of metallic or glowing objects. In many cases, and this is, I'm skipping quite ahead, in many cases, it is difficult to determine whether the light was so intense as to mask an object or otherwise make the shape of that object indiscernible. And that's really the problem that I had with what I was seeing. Like, I didn't want to look directly at it because it was pretty bright. If I could do the experience all over again, I would have squinted really, really hard at it immediately to see if I could make out a shape. What I've learned about plasma is that with something like ball lightning, the theory behind it is that there's plasma being generated in a toroidal fashion, which means basically like emanating in like a heart-shaped direction around the object. And the other thing, if you go through this NARCAP report, the thesis is essentially that a lot of these are like ball lightning plasmoid objects, but the similarities between them are that they are white objects, that they glow white. So I'd be interested in knowing more about these other experiences, because what I saw definitely wasn't white. It was a red and green thing. And the reason I brought up the toroidal form of the plasma is that what I know to have been plasma was the thing in the orb around it. The thing in the center is what I would think is the craft of the object. So I don't really know that that was necessarily plasma, but I now define the reddish fire that was happening around the object. So I think that was plasma, and I didn't know, I'd never seen plasma before in real life. So I don't think it was a typical plasmoid generated like between a power generating station on like a cloudy day. You can see like a floating ball of light. I don't think it was something like that, but it's possible there's some sort of atmospheric or electronic or electrical phenomenon that I'm not aware of, that I still haven't found in the literature, that it could have been, because I didn't see an object. Like I said, if I could do it again, I would have squinted to see if I could make out a form, but the light was so intense that the mask, the object or otherwise makes the shape indiscernible.
And it was a completely clear morning, no clouds.
Yeah, so if you go to the Doppler, if you go to the Doppler radar history, the nearest dot on the radar was like 20 miles away. There was not a cloud anywhere in the sky to be seen. And there wasn't any atmospheric anything within like 100 miles. So we were in a very, very clear, calm morning. It was a new moon, I think a day or two after a new moon. And it was just before daylight savings had turned over. So it would have been one of the darkest mornings. I was taken aback. I was a little surprised at how dark it was, because I hadn't been out. I hadn't gotten onto my walk in like a week. And so when I woke up early that morning, I said, all right, let's go do it. And when I got out, it was much darker than I was expecting. And so it almost felt like it was nighttime. So it was clear in that sense. And I know that it wasn't a light on an object. That's one of the other problems that have to be light reports and nighttime reports. But it wasn't a light on an object, because it was clear enough that I would have seen an object. That's the other reason I don't think it was a drone, because if it were, or at least not like a near drone, because if it were, it would have been, you know, I kept looking at the sky, but there's nothing left in the sky. So if it were like a drone, like 1,000 feet up, I think I still would have been able to make out some sort of movement up there. And of course, I spent the next, 40 minutes outside of my walk. And I'm, you know, generally walking with that part of the sky in view for about 30% of the walk. So I spent, you know, several minutes, and I didn't see any other lights or any other activity.
It's a very strange one, David, that.
Yeah. Like I said, I feel like I saw someone up there in the sky who has a space car, and we don't. And that's fascinating. And I'm interested in learning more about it, and I want a space car too.
So now it's put you on a mission to find out what it could be.
Yeah, I don't know if I mentioned this, but the person who I emailed has the same last name. But what I didn't know is that the person I emailed him to ask about, I think, was probably his father, maybe, you know, some of their close relatives, but that that person committed suicide after being shamed about UFOs publicly. So I felt bad after I read the rest of that guy's Wikipedia article, and then I'd asked his son about UFOs.
Huh. And he was a professor.
Yeah, so it was a professor at U of A whose name was James McDonald, and he investigated atmospheric physics explanations for UFOs because he was interested in them. And during some congressional hearing in like 1970, senator said something like, well, I wouldn't take anybody seriously who believes in little green men. And like 6 months later, he killed himself. Anyway, and the person I emailed was Kirk McDonald, who has that, the guy who killed himself, he has that guy's bibliography on his own physicsprinceton.edu bio. And so I didn't read the part of the Wikipedia page where it said that James McDonald would kill himself. I just saw that Kirk McDonald, who's a physics professor at Princeton, has this guy's bio, his like bibliography on his page. So I thought, well, maybe this guy has continued interest in this subject. But in fact, it may be a very sensitive topic. He still has the bio on his website, so it's not, I guess he's sort of invited in a little bit. But he didn't have much to say other than maybe it was a meteor. But when the theory about meteor-based plasma is that the meteor, when it travels in the sky, it's so hot as to create plasma in its trail. And then the electromagnetic field between the Earth and the plasma that's generated in the sky, that is, there's something sufficient to create ball plasma in between. And so when the meteor-based lightning explanation is thrown out there, it's not referring to plasma around the meteor. It's referring to plasma, like trail, plasma balls that get sort of created in its wake, if that makes sense. So anyway, that's not really a satisfactory explanation for me.
I think for now, it's going to remain unknown.
Yeah, I mean, if it is an extraterrestrial vehicle, then there's not going to be another explanation. And that's what's hard to, when you're talking about it with other people, that what do you tell the people that really did see something? Nice. Wow. What do you know? Like, you want to try to help them by finding an explanation for it. But if there really is no other explanation, well, that's sort of the end of the story. What are you supposed to do about it?
That's it. It gets classed as a UFO.
Yeah. You know, I think MUFON either classifies it as, well, they either find an explanation for it that they consider reasonable. They either can't find an explanation for it, or they call it, they classify it as an unidentified aerial vehicle, a UAV. And that's what the field investigator told me. And so basically, he did not have enough information to say that they thought that was a UAV. And I don't blame them. Their goal is to be a scientific organization. And, you know, my testimony is not scientific evidence. It might be, you can do scientific-like studies on large groups of opinions or, like, surveys. You can do sort of social science experiments and stuff like that. But you can't, you know, eyewitness testimony cannot be the sole basis for claiming the existence of a UAV for a scientific organization. So I don't blame them for not saying it was an unidentified aerial vehicle. The other thing is, you know, I'm not sure that I saw a physical thing. I think it was, but I didn't actually see anything physical. So even I'm not reporting having seen a physical object in the sky. It did look like that.
I mean, it would be very rare, you know, if you were to see it again, but on the off chance that you do, let us know.
Oh, I definitely will. I think it would be great to see it again. But one thing that the experience gave me was an appreciation for why we don't have photos. I sort of come to the conclusion that if you're looking at a photo or like a long video of something, then it's almost necessarily not a UFO because they don't want us to see them. You know, if you can put a UFO in your viewfinder, that means you can put a UFO in your crosshairs. And when you have laser weapons, that means you can then shoot said object instantly. So a UFO is never going to let us put them in their crosshairs if they can help it. And that's why I don't think we have any good photos of them. You almost need to be ready with a camera with like proper focus capabilities to be able to take a photo faster than they can, you know, leave. And I don't know that I'll ever be ready with a camera like that. Otherwise, I'd have to walk around with a camera on my head. But if I see it again, I'll let you know.
Exactly. That's why so many experiences happen when people are not expecting it. You know, when like yourself, you're out on their walk, you know, or they're driving home. When people are not expecting to have these experiences, so hence why, you know, we don't have cameras and stuff. And the cameras that we do have in our pocket, on our phones, they're great technology, but they ain't very good for taking pictures of objects that are, you know, not close by. You know, they're in the distance or they're up in the sky.
Yeah, it's so true. I mean, I got an Apple 13 Pro. I go on these walks at night to try to take photos. I can't get a good photo of the moon. It's sitting right there. It's the biggest object in the sky. I can't get a good photo of the moon with my Apple iPhone 13 Pro. It's hard to believe, but I think that there must be some lens configuration they use for near objects so they have good-looking pictures of people. But they're certainly not designed to take photos of things in the sky at night.
Absolutely. You know, I've been in the same situation. You know, we'd have a super moon and it'd be the closest it's been to Earth. And I get the camera out, take a picture, and it looks like it's, you know, even further away.
Yeah, like a white, a bright white ball or something. I don't really understand how to adjust your phone the right way. Maybe there's some way to make it work, or maybe I need to get a real photographer's camera or something.
That's wonderful, David.
All right, well, I hope you're able to get something good out of it. I will very much look forward to hearing it. All right, well, have a great day, Nick. Thanks so much for everything you do.
You're more than welcome, David. David, I really appreciate you coming on and sharing that for our listeners.
Have a good one.
Take care of yourself, all right? Keep in contact, and we'll speak soon.
All right, sounds good. Thanks, Nick.
Bye for now.
Bye.
I'm Richard Serrett. Join me on Strange Planet for in-depth conversations with the world's top paranormal investigators, alien abductees, Bigfoot trackers, monster hunters, time travelers, alternative archaeologists, remote viewers, and more.
As I was on the way to Area 51, I was stopping on the side of the road and just taking measurements, and I found this one spot where time slowed down by a fraction of a second. It's not supposed to do that.
From the two big categories, animal mutilations and human abductions, you have to conclude that genetic material is being harvested.
Well, I reached for a rifle, and I turned and looked, and it was already moving away, and it was descending the bluff. There's no way any human could have went down it. It was probably a 75-degree angle straight down, almost.
On Richard Serrett's Strange Planet, we're redefining reality. Listen now wherever you get your podcasts.
Do not go any further. Turn around. Go home.
Hello, Michael. Welcome to the show.
Thanks, Nick. Thanks for having me.
You're more than welcome. Thank you for coming on today, and you're calling from the state of Oregon.
Yes, sir.
Great stuff. Now, Michael, you have some UFO experiences to share. Would you like to start at the beginning, please?
Sure. Just to give you a little background, I'm 39 years old, originally from, born and raised in Bozeman, Montana. And this first occurrence happened when I was around 12 years old. My mom was always one that would wake us up if there was a meteor shower and stuff. She's always on letting us know about stuff like that, or whenever there's, you know, a blood moon eclipse, all that stuff, comets, etc. UFOs wasn't really anything that I ever thought about at that age. And one night, me and my sister it was around 1995, we're watching a meteor shower, and we noticed just as bright as any other random star that was in the sky. Mind you, this is out in the country, so very clear nights, you could see all the stars. And the brightness wasn't what brought our attention to the object. It was that it was moving in a strange way. It was spiraling in kind of a upward oblong egg motion kind of shape. And it was very, very, very high up in the atmosphere, I would say, in, you know, the satellite area range. And the object split into two, and it was bouncing off of each other. The two objects started to bounce and then spin around each other. And me and my sister were both just left in silence. Then I can't really remember, because this is so long ago, whether we had a conversation, do you see that, or anything like that. I just both knew that we were both seeing it. And we both had the feeling that what we were seeing was for us. We were seeing it, and what was doing it was aware that we were seeing it, and vice versa. It was aware that we were aware it was aware, if you can follow. So after we watched these for a bit, I don't even remember them disappearing or what made us ended up going side. I just remember that we had heard a very high pitched frequency, and it really freaked my sister out. I remember that she said when we went inside, she was worried she was going to be found dead in the ditch. I don't know why she said that. It really freaked my sister out. She's never been big about UFOs ever since. It's almost like she tried to block that out for a long time, because I didn't talk about it with her for years and years until we were adults. So yeah, that's about the gist of the first experience. It was very, very quick experience. We didn't watch this thing for more than about a minute. So the second time that I had an occurrence was 2005. And me and my friend Greg were taking some LSD. And we were walking about through the town, going to meet our friend Carl, who was working at the gas station. Now, as the three of us walked home, I will say Carl was stone cold sober. And this is what's great, because I'm very skeptical when it comes to this kind of things, because I'm all about science, you know? So I'm always going to be questioning what I'm seeing, what other people are seeing. And as we're walking, me and Carl were having a separate conversation, and Greg happened to say, "Hey, what is that?" And we're saying, "What's what?" And he pointed up into the sky, and we saw these two orange glowing objects. And they were almost moving in a slithery type way back and forth, kind of bouncing a little bit. It wasn't like fast motions. And these objects were probably, I would say, about 500 feet above us. You could get a good look on them, but you really couldn't see what they were. And they just almost danced for us. And same thing, these things also would like spin around each other in a circular motion. And then they would stop and just kind of slither back and forth. And we watched these things for about 20 minutes. And the whole time we're discussing, you know, what are we seeing? Are you seeing what we're seeing? Because we're thinking this is hallucinations. I'm convinced what we're seeing is some trash blowing in the wind, something like that, right? So we're just keep going on about these things. But the way these things moved, it would look like cloth 1 minute blowing above us, or kind of like how seagulls will like trail in the wind like that. But this is at night. So I've never seen seagulls, for one, in Bozeman, Montana, two, at night. And they dance for us once again. They would go completely behind us to where we would actually have to turn our entire bodies and watch these things. We both just kept saying, you know, what are these things? When they would be above us, they would look like I described, kind of like seagull, but sometimes it looked like a piece of trash bag blowing in the wind. I don't know if that was because of how I was tripping, the way that the things were forming, but these two lights danced around us for about 20 minutes, and eventually they took off at a very high rate of speed and were gone. The third experience I had was most recent, was during the daytime, actually, and wasn't particularly had any reason to be looking up at the sky. We were going to go to Virginia City. It was a family event after my dad's funeral, and that's why I happened to be visiting Bozeman on that certain day. I actually had already moved to Oregon at this point, and getting ready to come out of the gas station on a frontage road there in Bozeman, Montana, and a silver object just happened to catch my eye in the sky. And so it was just sitting there in one spot for a good 3-4 minutes. I just sat there and watched it and kept asking, you know, trying to get other people to see it, my family members, and none of them could really get an eye on it. And so I was trying to block out the sun while I'm watching it to see, you know, is it a plane? Is it, you know, is it just my eyes playing tricks on me? Because sometimes if something's very far away, it looks like it's not moving, but it is. If you're not watching it long enough. And it was just sitting there, hovered above me. And then I noticed there was two more silver objects just hovering above for another good minute. And then two of them took off at a high rate of speed, and the other one just hovered above. And then my sister, same sister, mind you, I've got two different sisters. I just, to give you a little backstory there. My sister was getting all freaked out that I was drawing attention to us at the gas station, so I really didn't get to spend much more time trying to observe them. So that was kind of unfortunate. Yeah, that's about it. I mean, I've spent a lot of time looking at the sky over my life, seen satellites go by. I've seen the ISS go by, played a trick on me before. And I've never once, when I was UFO hunting, have I seen something. When I want to see something, I've never ever seen anything. Hoping I'm going to see something as amazing as these occurrences, but nothing is ever as weird or strange as the first time I saw it.
And hearing that high-pitched frequency was very strange.
Yeah, I think that was kind of what made us go inside and stop looking.
Right, and your sister doesn't like talking about that?
No.
And was this a different sister than your later experience?
Yeah, well, they're both there. My my, I'll just say E, as my sister E, she didn't want to, she was living with, and but she was actually like trying to say, hey, you know, what are you seeing? What are you seeing? You know?
Right. Gotcha. This high pitched sound that you heard, did it hurt? Was it painful to hear?
Not necessarily. I wouldn't say painful. It was just very weird, the fact that we were hearing anything, because it's a normal just country night hearing crickets or anything like that. There shouldn't have been anything making a sound like that. It was more that we were hearing it, what was freaky.
Yeah, it didn't belong.
And it's hard when a memory is so old too, you know, you try to like what was said, what was, you know, but all I can remember is what I saw that's imprinted in my mind.
Yeah, of course. Okay. So the object that you saw, first of all, it was just one object.
At first it was just into two. Mm-hmm.
Okay. And then it split into two, and then it was they were rotating around each other.
Mm-hmm. In a circular motion, they were like spinning around each other pretty fast, but in an elegant way, you know, it wasn't jerky. It was in an elegant way.
In a controlled manner.
Uh-huh. Forgot. Remember I had said too, they were like bouncing off of each other. They would like come together. When I say bounce, they like come together, separate, and then come back, and then come together and separate and come back. And then they would circle around each other again.
Quite high up. Same kind of height as like
very
satellites. So very,
very high up.
Very high up.
Right. Okay. Because like I was saying, I spent a lot of time staring at the sky. So you can see, if you spend enough time looking at the sky, you can see satellites go by. They're very, very dim. You will see one going by. They tricked me before. I'm like, oh, seen something. What is that? And it will just move in a singular line. It does no variance to the line at all. I know what satellites look like, and this did not move anything like that, but it was at that elevation, much brighter than the satellite. Like I said, bright as any random star you would see on any night. The luminosity wasn't anything quite special. It was the fact that it was moving in such a strange way, and then one becomes two.
Yeah, very odd. And satellites generally don't do that.
At 12 years old, I had no, you know, satellites, things like that. Science wasn't, I didn't understand the distances of space or anything. You know, you've got a, what's the word, a non-objective mind, you know? You're just an observer when you're a kid.
And yeah, and back in that day, there would have been a lot less satellites than there are now.
Mm-hmm. 95, 96, yeah.
Yeah, even in the 90s, yeah, very. Not as many as there are now. You look up and you can't, you know, you see one every couple of seconds.
If you stare at the night sky in the right area for about maybe 10 minutes max, and you know what you're looking for, you'll see them.
Yeah, absolutely.
They're everywhere.
Okay, and when you were with your friends and you saw these objects, now you had been taking you had been taking LSD, but one of you hadn't.
No, my friend Carl was at the gas station. We were going to meet him, so we went and met him at the gas station, and we were just walking with him home to go to his house.
Right, gotcha. Okay. You know, generally when you take LSD, it don't have shared hallucinations. Usually people are having separate.
Exactly. Exactly what freaking Carl said, bro. It's exactly what he said, because we're saying that. We're like, what? What if we were just tripping? He's like, it'd be, for one, he's like, because we all saw the exact same thing. We all kept describing what we were seeing to each other. I was saying, we're like, are you seeing what we're seeing? He's describing everything I described to you the same way. We're like, we kept going, what the F is that? What is it? Like, we wanted it to be like, oh, pff, that's what that is. That's dumb. You know, but we still could never come up with an explanation for what it was. And exactly what Carl said, he's like, it'd be for two people to have the same hallucination, strange. And I've got a lot of experience with psychedelics, and I've suffered much hallucinations from sleep depth. I know what hallucinations look like. Hallucinations are layered things, distortions, not objects appearing and then disappearing or flying away. I've never once seen any hallucination or something appear that was there, something manifest itself or anything like that. And the fact that we all saw it at a different times, you know, me and Carl will have a conversation. Greg's listening to music in his own world, obviously looking up at the sky, night sky.
You know, when it was flying, you may have seen it maybe as different colors or move or change in shape maybe, but, you know, there was definitely something there.
The thing is, Nick, about like hallucinations with LSD is I don't get vivid hallucinations with LSD. Like, it's more cerebral for me. It's more like a huge adrenaline rush. It's like where my mind, my thoughts go is where the trip goes. It's never like a lot of visual stuff for me. Shrooms, yes, but you don't see things that aren't there. You see things in a distorted different way. You see reality altered. You don't see things that aren't real when you trip like that.
No, that's true.
Yeah, I tried to always ask myself, you know, did what me and my sister saw, was that a dream? You know, but I just, when I dream, I don't remember my dreams. Like, I just don't. I don't have dreams like that where I remember, like, have a very vivid dreams. Like, oh, I had this one dream and it was super real. And when I woke up, I don't have dreams like that. But I dream about nothing and then I wake up for whatever reason. Like, I just don't have very lucid dreams. So, and then, you know, talking to my sister years later about her, you know, being willing to admit that we saw something, but, you know, her recollection of it is, you know, about the same as mine. A 25-year-old fuzzy memory. She doesn't remember any conversations that we had. She didn't even remember me telling her about the being afraid she's going to be found dead in the ditch thing.
Right. Okay. Have you always had an interest in this kind of subject?
I didn't at first until probably I would say I really started to be fascinated with UFOs when I was probably about 17 or 18.
It leaves you with a lot of questions, doesn't it?
Yeah, it does, which I like. That's fine. I like questions, but it left me with more reassurance that what I saw that first time that I was not of this earth or, well, you know, maybe of something of our creation, possibly, who knows, whatever they were. The, you know, when the Bob Lazar documentary came out, I felt more gratified. And when all the reports started came out, the Tic Tac objects and the trans medium vehicles, just really started to make me go, now I'm really wondering what those were, you know. And it feels more like better to talk about it with people, you know, because it's like they can't just say, now if I talk about my experience, people are less likely to say, oh, you're crazy, you're making it up.
And a lot of people feel the same way as soon as that started to come out about what the government were releasing. A lot of people were kind of like, oh, maybe there is something in this subject. So a lot of people started tuning in. They started reading books and getting into the subject more. They don't feel like they're going to be ridiculed so much by being interested or even talking about it.
Yeah, I wish I would have heard about the Bob Lazar story before, just a few years ago when that documentary came out. But yeah, I didn't even know about that until Corbell came out with that documentary, and I was just... So, you know, I believe his story, you know, believe every word of it.
Yeah, of course. Because his story's been out for ages. In fact, the guest before you, he lives in New Mexico, and he lives roughly in the same area as Los Alamos, you know, where Bob Lazar allegedly was.
Mm-hmm. Work.
And he, and he was saying, as a kid, doesn't really remember Bob Lazar, the story, when he was younger. He was like you. He came across it much later on when someone said to him, you know, you should definitely watch this documentary. This is literally a conversation I've had just not so long ago. And he was saying he remembers a guy who had the rocket car. So he remembers, but he didn't know the whole Bob Lazar story, so...
Yeah, the fact that they denied he worked there and then they were able to prove that they tried to erase his identity should be enough proof that what he's saying is true.
Exactly. Just because the government's turned around and said, no, we never work for us, it probably means the opposite. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, you're full of it. And then they prove it that you did. That shows, okay, then why are you trying to cover that up? Why did they delete, they tried to delete his life?
Yeah, they sure did. That's wonderful, Michael. Good job.
Oh, thanks. Appreciate it, Nick. Thanks for giving me the opportunity to tell the story.
Yeah, no problem, man.
You say that, so like all these weird things, UFOs, Bigfoot, and other phenomenons have to be connected in some way that I believe is far stranger than we can even possibly imagine, like layered existences that are crossing over. And that's why the Skinwalker Ranch is like a hot spot or something for it. I don't know. But somehow it's all connected.
Yeah, I definitely believe it's all connected. That's why I have the subjects that I do on this show, because I believe there is a connection somehow. People coming on and sharing those, you know, their accounts, we try and make little connections, you know, if we can find like little similarities to maybe finding little puzzle pieces and maybe putting them together into a bigger picture.
My wife's uncle, he's in his late 60s, and he swears up and down when he's a teenager, he was his dad there in California, and they're going down the road, and he saw a large, very large, hairy-looking man way off in the distance moving through the deep, deep snow at a real, real pretty quick pace. And he's like, nothing moves through snow like that, upright. He just doesn't. And he tried to get his dad to stop, and his dad wouldn't. And he still swears that story still to this day in his 60s, and that happened, you know, 50 years ago.
That's pretty interesting.
So I'm a firm believer in all things weird and strange that should be questions. Like, just because there's not evidence of something doesn't mean it doesn't exist either. So just don't have evidence for it. You know, the weird mermaid creature and all kinds of, you know, we don't even know what's down in the ocean, what kind of things.
It's a very strange world, you know. There's a lot of weird stuff out there. Michael, I really appreciate you coming on and sharing that for our listeners.
Yeah, no worries. I know mine were probably pretty quick, but like I said, they're kind of fuzzy old memories, and you know, I didn't have a lot of, just like I said, just the facts and the details of what I saw. I didn't have a lot of extra story to give, so.
No, it's fine. Okay, take care.
All right, buddy. All right, take care.
Keep in contact, all right?
I will. All right, Nick. Good luck. Bye.
Thank you, Michael. That's all for this episode. Keep updated and connected with the show on Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram. And if you have an encounter that you'd like to share on the podcast, you can email me at ufochronicles@gmail.com, or you can reach out to me via the contact page on my website, ufochroniclespodcast.com. A big thank you to David and Michael for sharing tonight, and thank you all for listening. I will be back next week. Till then, stay safe and keep watching the skies. Goodbye.